Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, the executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and you are listening to episode 36 of Tech to Go. First, I would like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for today's podcast. As usual, I have my three co-hosts. I have Randy Johnston, a principal with K2 Enterprises. Welcome today, Randy.
Thank you very much. Good day to all.
I also have Renee Lassert, who's the CEO of Bill.com. Renee, welcome. You still there, Renee?
I think he's probably on mute. And
I think he may be. Well, we'll go ahead and bypass Renee for the moment. And I also have Dave McClure. Dave's the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. And, Dave, glad to have you.
Glad to be here, as always. So I have to tell you, this is the first time I've had to say on this call, it is cold in the Shenandoah Valley today.
I bet that's true. Randy, did you guys end up getting the snow in Kansas you expected the other day?
Yes, we definitely had a blizzard here, and it was much worse not too far to the north of us. Clients in Nebraska were a foot under and basically stranded for some time.
I think I've got Renee back now, and I suspect that, Renee, it's still sort of sunny and warm.
You know, it's not. We've had an unusual cold spell here where the other day, you know, I've lived out here 25 years, and we had snow down to 700 feet, which is just unusual for us. So our house is around 500 feet, so we didn't have it at our house. But it's been cold. We haven't gotten above 50 this week. So,
well, I guess California. Cold is relative. It's been 7 degrees here today. So, well, guys, today I think we're going to talk about three different things. I'm going to wrap the first one up into one topic. I'd like to talk a little bit about Microsoft Office 2010, which is available in beta now, and also Exchange 2010 that ties into that, which is actually available in a full release. And then we could talk a little bit about the new Droid release software for mobile devices, and then want to talk about the national broadband plan and everything that's going on with that. So let's just get started right off, Dave, with the national broadband plan. Why don't you update us on what's going on there and why that impacts us?
What we're looking at, as you and I have talked quite a bit, Darren, is the perfect broadband storm, where you have a number of issues colliding at the same exact moment. You have those people who applied for the $7.2 billion in broadband stimulus grants. They began to announce the people who have made it to the second round, and that began last Monday. Interestingly enough, Page County, where I live here in Virginia, was one of those who got accepted for a $2 million internet backbone project, which is kind of fun to work on. But you've got those rolling out, and that money is going to be hitting the marketplace right about February of next year at exactly the same time that the FCC is required to give Congress its new national broadband plan. Now, the national broadband plan, as we're hearing about it now, looks like it's going to be all about stimulating adoption. What they've begun to realize is we've got ways to get broadband to just about anybody who wants it, but about 37% of people are not using it, and they want to know why. And there are a variety of reasons. Some people feel the technology is too complicated. Some people feel they don't want to pay that much, so the prices have been dropping pretty heavily. Other people say it's just not relevant to their lives, or they don't have the education to be able to use the Internet. I mean, let's face it, if you're not English literate, you're not going to be able to use the Internet in America. It just doesn't work. So we've got all that, the national broadband plan coming down, and exactly the same moment the FCC plans to try to wrap up its proposed rulemaking on the so-called network neutrality. And what they're trying to do is expand from on the four consumer rights that were adopted back in 2005 with two more new ones, one of which I think is pretty good. The other one I have some doubts about. Here are the two new things they want to add to the basic freedoms. The four freedoms said, look, you can use any application you want on the Internet. They can't cut off applications like voice over IP. You can use any kind of program and go anywhere you want to on the Internet. They have no right to limit how any application is used on the Internet. So some basic freedoms. To that, they want to add, one, that Internet providers have to become more transparent in what their policies are. The terms of service agreements that are basically dozens of pages of tightly packed legalese that don't make any sense, and you normally just blow past them because you don't want to read all that stuff anyway, so you just click I accept, and then you find out that they can cut off your service if they think you're using too much broadband. So there's got to be more transparency. That one I like. The one that's a little more iffy is the one that says that network operators cannot manage their own networks, that they have to let everything through willy-nilly. They can't prioritize any kind of traffic. That one's more problematic because as we study it more and more, we realize it simply isn't going to work. Here's a scenario, and admittedly, it's an extreme scenario, but you have two data packets that are competing across the network. One is a kid who's downloading his 500th movie of the week because he likes to just download and collect illegally pirated movies. And the other is an E911 call from someone whose house is burning down and needs the fire department. If you can't prioritize those two, what happens if the family dies? And we're not prepared for that kind of scenario yet. So that's going to happen in just about the February time frame. And if that wasn't enough, the FCC decides at this point they want to completely overhaul universal service. Now, universal service was created in the 20s in order to make sure that everyone could get telephone service in this country. And what we do is we subsidize. If you can't afford a telephone, if you're low income or you live somewhere in the middle of Montana and can't get service, the federal government taxes your phone bill and my phone bill in order to make phone service available out there. The FCC says, well, we've mostly done that job for telephones, so let's switch the money, expand the program, and have it cover broadband so that everybody in the country gets broadband. That's a little problematic. I think a lot of people would like to see it happen. But as I just said, we can already get a broadband signal to just about everywhere in America. So is it really necessary? All those things are going to collide in February. And I know I'm not letting anybody have a word in edgewise, but here's my point. Accountants who are savvy to the broadband market and accountants who understand the technology are going to be desperately needed as new startups crop up, and as the federal government decides how not only how they want to dole out all this money they want to hand out, but also how it's got to be accounted for and what the hurdles are to come back and to report back into the government how the money has been spent. I think it's going to be a real boom era for the broadband industry and for accountants to serve that industry. And now I'll take a breath and let somebody else get a word in edgewise.
Well, with all that going on, now would not be the right time to talk about health care reform. For me. Randy, what's your take on all that?
Well, you know, I think Dave was really just putting the litany together about as succinctly, clearly as possible. I think it would also be helpful for the listeners to know that all of the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, The Economist, at least three different places, have had articles on this issue over the last 3 weeks. So there's actually some pretty current press that is also trying to summarize it. And I actually thought the Wall Street Journal summary was quite eloquent. So that might be a place to read more about it.
So, Dave, where do you see this falling out at the end of the day? What is your take at the end of the day, how this is going to affect our listeners?
Oh, gosh, handicapping the whole thing. First of all, you have to be aware of this because this is going to drive the most dramatic expansion in innovation I think we've seen since the 1980s and the debut of the PC. I think you're going to see lots of new applications. I think you're going to see a lot of people scrambling. Look at just the basics, telemedicine, for example. We're just beginning to see the tip of the iceberg in remote home monitoring for patients, for example. We've started to see cropping up in some counties what they call the online nurse chat, where if you've got a sick kid, you don't take him to the emergency room. You go online and you say, look, my kid has these little red bumps on his tummy and he's got a fever of 102. Should he go see the doctor? That alone, that service alone, takes about a third of the people out of the emergency room on a weekend and unclogs doctor's offices or clogs them up on Monday morning, who knows. But these are the kinds of applications that are suddenly going to crop up everywhere, and every one of those startups is going to desperately need accounting services.
Are those going to crop up because of the amount of money that's being thrown at it by the government, or... you know, what's changed that's going to make all that sort of start happening?
The government is spending its money, and this is very interesting because the federal government doesn't have a record of spending money wisely. But in this case, they've done a pretty good job. The amount that's going into infrastructure, $7.2 billion, sounds really big until you consider that the overall stimulus package was, what, a trillion? So that amount of money is a relatively small sum. Frankly, most of the major private companies are going to spend 3 to 4 times that much on their own without the government money. So that's not where I'm seeing the big influx of cash. What I'm really seeing is they're going to stimulate broadband adoption. That 37% of Americans who aren't currently using broadband, they're going to mount community education programs and skills programs in order to bring them online. If you bring online 30% more of America within the next 2 to 3 years, you've created a massive market. And where there's a massive market, people will look to fill it, and that means innovation, that means new companies who need accounts.
You know, well, the question I have, and I think this is another topic we have today, kind of, Darren, but is it going to be, are people going to be moving on to the web through the PC or through the smartphone? And so, you know, where is the infrastructure dollars? Where should they be spent? And it just, you know, as people use more and more iPhones and Androids and stuff like that, it just seems like the universal access that Dave talked about really ought to be targeted at the people using their smartphone because, you know, I just don't think a lot of people are going to need a PC for what they need to do at home with the web.
Ornea brings up a good point. We were going to talk a little bit about the Droid release. So I have not used it or seen it. Which one of you, Randy, maybe you have the most experience with that at this point?
Perhaps, and that really is a function of where I live probably more than anything else. Because of where I'm at in Kansas, my cellular carrier coverage is pretty light. I've got a choice between Sprint or what used to be Alltel, which is now a Verizon company. So kind of the good news, bad news is I can use Sprint, which has been very good for me through the years, and we've recommended Palm Prees and other things in those predecessor phones. But our my alternate company, Network Management Group, we are on the ground across Kansas, so we really don't have any choice but to use Verizon. It's the only carrier that covers our state. So in our smartphone strategy, we actually have used mobile Microsoft technologies. But since the Droid was introduced the first Friday in November, there's a number of us that have actually picked that up as our primary product. And I've actually talked to other users in Pennsylvania and in Nashville, just to name a couple other places, that are using the Droid with good success. The applications that are being released for the Droid are certainly not anywhere near the scale of the iPhone, but the usability is actually somewhat in the ballpark of the iPhone. A number of analyst groups think that the Droid instruments will have greater market share than the iPhone within 3 years. Not sure I agree with that analysis, but it's a good, solid product, and it really gives us a key platform that we've been watching and waiting for, and that's the ability to run a virtual machine on a handheld. So if you can begin to picture your phone being a way to get to the web as a browser, very clean on that side, and or that you can run a virtual machine where you can just lay your phone down and have it connect to a keyboard and screens, that day is pretty close upon us. So that's actually one of my key holiday projects, is to take a Droid and make a virtual machine run on it.
What carriers are we seeing that has the Droid?
All. There's no U.S. carrier that doesn't have one at this point. The real key difference, though, is that there are a number of Droid version 1 phones out there, and during the first quarter, we're going to see the next wave of version 2 phones. The Verizon Droid is the first one that's a version 2 that's in the market, but T-Mobile, AT&T, right on down the list, all have scheduled Droid 2.0 phones on the blocks, and I've played with a number of those pre-release phones, and they're all very interesting. Plus, globally, Droid is already doing very well.
Good. Renee, have you had a chance to even look at it yet?
Yeah, you know, I have looked at it. We had a Verizon rep in the office, and she had a bunch of phones, and I got to look at it. And, you know, the thing that, you know, I didn't get to play with it more than 10 minutes. I mean, it definitely is a strong, you know, smart phone platform, but the you know, I think the ad that they have out there right now kind of is the point they're trying to play, and I think that's probably, you know, comes to the product. And the ad is, you know, a bunch of people walking down streets with, you know, white earbuds in their ears, and, you know, they're usually pretty sexy women, and the ad, the voiceover is, you know, you don't need eye candy, you need something that, you know, is a robot. You need a robot, you need something to do work for it. And I understand the appeal to that, but I think most people like to buy eye candy. So,
yeah.
And having played with it, you know, and I have an iPhone, it's, the iPhone is simpler and it doesn't have the power, but, you know, it actually does everything in the apps that you can do. I mean, it's pretty, so it's an interesting marketing strategy, which I think goes to, you know, the point that Randy just brought up is, you know, if you need a virtual machine, that's going to be a powerful thing that you can do, but most people don't need that. Right, so that's kind of the, you know, they could have a very loyal customer base, but my guess is it won't, you know, unless they kind of make it more like eye candy, they're not going to get the type of 200 million users out there in 3 years that the iPhone has done.
Well, I guess the point to realize is Droid 2.0, you said, Randy, is out now, and every carrier is coming out with a 2.0 device, at least in the near future.
Yes, in the very near future, and there's been, in my opinion, watching the darn thing shift, the smoothness and the development from Droid 1.0 to 2.0, marvelous progress. And so, Renee, I do believe you're absolutely right. You know, another way that I say that is sizzle sells, and so
right.
That eye candy approach really makes a lot of difference. And there's been a huge step forward in version 1 to version 2, plus there's a high probability, in fact, already announced products, that Droid will be a potential netbook operating system as well. So, you know, we've got this particular operating system showing up in lots of different places, and developers can write a single application to run cross-platform on the phones, on the netbooks, and across a broad market. So, you know, right now, if you think about our U.S. approach with the iPhone lock to AT&T, globally that's not the case because the iPhone is open outside our borders. But here in the U.S., you know, if you're going to do iPhone, who are you going to call? It's AT&T.
Right. And
you know, on that same topic, how long does AT&T have a lock on the iPhone in the U.S.? Does anybody know the answer to that, or is there such a time frame?
Well,
the lock time frame. There is a time frame, but I don't recall what it is. It's just a year or two away, as I recall.
Well, the lock was supposed to come off in January. and the negotiations broke down. So it looks like Verizon might get such an instrument in the October time frame, and you know, an iPhone on Verizon. But the lock is gone. There was a 3-year exclusivity thing, and it goes away here in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that.
Wow. Well, guys, in the time we have left, I think, you know, probably one of the things that we're going to talk about today that most impacts a lot of the accounting listeners is a discussion you and I even had for our firm this week, Randy, is what do we do about Office 2010? And, you know, there's a beta release that's back open again that you can download, as well as Exchange 2010, I believe, is in full release now. So, Randy, catch us up on that and talk to us about why we ought to be thinking about this or shouldn't be thinking about it at this point.
Well, I think the simple net answer is the open beta is out there now. There are key productivity gains inside the product that will be obvious once you get your hands on it. From a strategy perspective, many of you are purchasing equipment right now, so our key admonition is to convert those OEM licenses, those licenses that are pre-installed on your computers for Windows 7 or Office, convert those from OEM licenses to open licenses, which gives you the benefit of being able to upgrade those machines sometime in the next calendar years. Actually, you've got 3 years if you do it right. So you can convert your firm from Office 2007 to 2010. The key thing for me and productivity, just to name one item, is Outlook 2010 allows me to process email faster than Outlook 2007 or any predecessor versions. So we're unfortunately, my volume's higher than I'd like, with about 180 to 200 messages a day. That takes me about 3 hours to handle, about a minute a message. And when I'm running an Office 2010, I can handle it in about one-third of the time, or about a, you know, an hour instead of 3 hours. There's lots of reasons why that's the case. There are also small improvements across the products in Excel or Inside Access and so forth. So the suite has some advantages. But in general, I think you've got to plan that as we go forward, it will be an Office 2010 environment by the time our public practice listeners get out of tax season. And the industry guys will actually be able to look at it and say, this is when we think we're going to convert. Now, I am not one to convert just for conversion's sake, certainly not. But, you know, we are not going to go back to the old interfaces. It's going to continue to be the Office 2007 interfaces. And one interesting new feature that's worth mentioning also in 2010 is the ribbon menus become customizable, which is a nice addition back into the product. So I think that'll give us a lot of the benefit we had with the icons before as well. So there are some other performance reasons, and there's some other web-enabled reasons like the Office web apps and so forth. So over the next few months, we'll be probably able to talk more about a lot of those things. But, you know, at the time's coming, we're going to have another new major release of Office, and we might as well prepare for it now.
Well, just one thought I had is, so do you feel that 2010 beta Office is strong enough to go ahead and download it and start using it on your desktop?
It is. You know, I have run the alpha for a large number of months, five plus six months. And realistically, it's very rock solid as it stands. And personally, I prefer to spend my time in the Office 2010 environment because I can do things quicker, easier in Word, Excel, Outlook, PowerPoint. I don't use Access enough to really say it's quicker or slower on that light. The new OneNote 2010 is a quicker, easier to use product also, more features, lots of things that I wish were in the product are in there now. The user interfaces are more consistent, and the organization of the user interfaces is more logical. So, yeah, you definitely would want your IT you know, professionals to be working on this during tax season, or at least for the industry listeners, have them looking at it to plan out a conversion and migration strategy.
However,
I know we're go ahead, Dave.
If I can interject. Now, listen, I've been a longtime beta tester and a longtime beta tester for Microsoft. Love their products to death. You know that, Randy. And do not download a major beta on the on the eve of tax season if you are an accounting firm. I agree with Randy. If you've got an IT department, let them play with it. They got to be up to speed when it goes live. But please, 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 please do not throw something like that into your system just as you're creeping into tax season. And Renee, you got to help me out here. Imagine what it's like for a tax software company to have to deal with bugs in Office that are screwing up a computer in the midst of tax season.
I tend to agree that it's not the best time to download something that's that core to your system.
I didn't hear Randy say to go ahead and download it. I just heard him say that it was stable. Did I get that right, Randy?
Yeah, you absolutely. In fact, we'll take another rule for you. I never run production environments on beta software.
Absolutely.
So the good news is that the beta is stable enough. And remember the strategy, listeners, that we've talked about through the years, is if you're going to do these beta programs, put them in virtual machines so they're completely isolated from the rest of your environment. That's really the safe place to play with them. But I would just, as a broad brush for our listeners, say this thing is actually stable enough now that I see no issue with Microsoft getting it out in a timely fashion. My best guess, without having facts, is they were actually trying to get this pushed on the same schedule as Office 2007. In other words, release the code in November and push it for retail release in January. So we'd have been talking about a released product. But they had integration with Exchange 2010, with SharePoint 2010, and with Office web apps that they just weren't quite satisfied with, and they had no real motivation to get it out. Over the past 2 weeks, Microsoft has confirmed the actual release date will be in June, although they haven't named the day.
So that actually works pretty well with most practitioners, at least at this point. From watching the videos, and again, I haven't used it, but the like you mentioned, Randy, the email feature looks significantly improved, and I think probably all four of us would say we're looking for better ways to handle our email. I know it certainly takes me a long time.
You mean select all, delete doesn't work for you?
Boy, that's how you cut that time down. I understand that now. No, I've gotten
that's
to
know
you. I don't know how you keep
up.
He
went
Randy.
In there. He set a filter. Said if it's from Darren Root, delete.
That's it. Well, guys, we are out of time today, and this is our last podcast of the year, so I wish you guys a happy holiday, and thanks so much for your time this year. As always, you guys are fantastic, so I really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Indeed. Exactly.
Well, happy holidays to everyone, and we will be together in January and take up the new topics. So, again, thanks so much, and I want to thank ADP for being our corporate sponsor. Good day, everyone.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.